Welcome to the Memoirs of Her. This is your host, Sandera Mendes, on the Memoirs of Her. H standing for humble, E standing for exquisite, R standing for resilience. Please be advised, this is a podcasting session coming to you with an adventurous and humorous life journey of a mysterious woman, including her accounts in life. So tonight's topic is going to be about delegating the gift of teenage autonomy. Yes, I said it, teenage autonomy. So, how many parents have experienced issues with their tweens or teenager, shall I say? Our children will go from being disobedient to actually disrespectful, representing their inability to cooperate and struggle with their individuality and power. I'm pretty sure a few of us have experienced that, right? So I must say it is a complicated and strenuous feeling when, as parents, all you're trying to do is either understand your tween or teenager and try to come to an actual resolution when ironing out any issues, you know? Or basically when trying to just simply discipline them, right? So what if I told you that the underlying problems of tweens and teenagers is not just the struggle to maintain the individuality, but to establish a degree of autonomy within the household they live in and with their parents. Now, when I say the degree of autonomy, I don't mean them acting as though they pay the rent in the house so they can do whatever it is that they please. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, as you know, having autonomy as in making them feel wanted, making them feel included rather than excluded from the family decisions and excluded from their feelings. You know, you want to be able to, as parents, have an open ground for where they can express themselves, and you know, you be able to have like a family table where you have discussions. So that's what I mean as far as them making them feel wanted and as though they count when it comes to the family dynamic. Okay, so for instance, I'm going to give another example. A disobedient tween or teenager may indicate they are not understood and feelings aren't being acknowledged or respected. So as a result, they will resort to being a difficult, manipulative, and non-cooperative tween or teenager with their parents or guardians, right? So I know many of us have experienced that with either teenagers or tweens, right? So I think the secret here to discipline and raising our children is to establish boundaries by extending the gift of autonomy and respect. As parents, I most certainly value two things. Treat people how you would like to be treated, no matter the age, and respect of persons should not be devalued because of their condition or position in life. So what I mean by that, as far as if a child or just anyone in general, you know, is not living a certain type of lifestyle, or they fall under a certain financial bracket, or they may have a mental condition or something as so, you know, I feel that at the end of the day, people should not turn up their nose to people like that or treat them any less than who and what they are, you know. So that's what I mean as far as respect of persons should not be devalued because of their condition or position in life, okay? We should always assume respect because we have it for ourselves, and to extend that. So when it's down to the parent to child dynamic, respect should also be there. It should be implemented so that way that child can emulate it in return. Okay, so Therefore, allowing the gift of autonomy will help encourage our tweens and teenagers to feel valued, acknowledged, and respected. So parental supervision involves taking an active interest and role in our children's lives without creating an unfriendly and stifled authoritative environment. So another example will consist of a stifled authoritative environment is dictating rules in the home solely centered on the ability to control our teens and teenagers passively. You know, this creates monsters in the future. This creates deceptive, devious teenagers in the future, because if they feel that there's so much rules in the home, when they get the opportunity to do something that goes against those rules, they will actually do it because of feeling stifled by the rules and not, you know, looking at the rules as something to help them and assist them and, you know, being better young adults. You know, instead of them looking at it that way, they looking at it as though they feeling as though they're a prisoner of these rules. Okay, so that was just my opinion. So it can lead to our teenagers also being disobedient, but later resenting us, or excuse me, not even just disobedient, but I would say disobedient behind the scenes. But let's say, like, if they're in the home and they know that the rules have to be enforced and they have to follow it, yes, they will be obedient, but later on resent us as parents in the long run. So parental guidance consists of setting boundaries and limits within the home that are healthy and conducive to our teenagers' well-being and development as young adults. And autonomy with parental guidance and limitations will help our children to live responsibly and not just up to an unrealistic expectations they do not resonate with or respect. Now, I'm not saying that, oh, if the rule is for them to do their chores in the home or whatever the case might be, I'm not saying that that's unrealistic expectation, because that teach them how to be domesticated as far as taking care of themselves and hygiene. So of course I wouldn't go against that. But let's say, you know, the expectation lies in their education. You might expect them to get all A's. You might expect them to be, you know, the most sharpest student. But is it realistic at the end of the day, you know, as far as, you know, the pressure, you know, the boundaries that they are experiencing and feeling, and do they want to do these things, you know? So as parents, we want to be mindful and supportive of them and not basically be going against them because we feel like we're doing what's best for them, because in their eyes, in their perspective, it may not resonate with them, and they may not see, you know, through the lens of how you see things as far as what's best for them. Okay, so it's good to keep a common ground for them to actually choose between a bunch. Let's say give them an ultimatum to choose between a selective group and ask them whichever it is that they choose, whatever life path, whatever decisions that they choose to make, it could be amongst those choices, opposed for them to, you know, to just make a random choice and it goes against their well-being. So I think as parents, we can set those boundaries and parameters to help them, but it also helps them to decide on their own without us deciding for them, or having, you know, this thing where our children are only identified through their parents. Like, they want to have their own, you know, like individuality as far as being a person, and don't want to always be classified by their parents or living in the shadows of their parents. Sometimes they just want to be who they are, you know, and that's just my opinion. So once again, as I said before, tonight's show is going to be about discussing delegating the gift of teenage autonomy to our teenagers and tweens, and watch how it can be a life-changing experience for both parents, child, or children. Okay, so without further ado, let's get right into the show. Hey, So the first question is, what is the difference between autonomy and authority? Now, autonomy is acting on the ability to have a voice, to articulate one's own interests and values in life. Simple, right? So, authority, it entails having the rights and power to enforce rules and regulations in addition to making final decisions. Okay, so those are the difference, right? So, let's get a little bit more in depth. Okay, so when it comes down to autonomy, right? Autonomy can respectively be administered to children by helping to make them feel important and relevant in the family decisions and home. Autonomy can be implemented to teenagers as a way to give them a voice that can give an opinion or suggestion of their own that'll be valued by their parents or guardian without them feeling disregarded or dismissed as far as their thoughts and feelings. So when autonomy is abused and not respectively implemented by teenagers, it can cause conflict and disharmony. Okay, so in other words, when we have a disrespectful child that feel like they could say and do whatever they want and not respecting their parents or guardian in the home, that means they are taking advantage and abusing their autonomy because they not being respectful or responsible as a teenager or tween. Okay, and they need to get checked. Plain and simple. When teenagers use their voice to be disrespectful and willfully belligerent, it is not an indication of maturity or individuality enforced. It is the practice of an irresponsible and self-entitled teenager who lacks respect and the capacity to give respect to either their peer group, parents, or someone of higher authority. Teenagers and tweens need to understand the boundaries and limits that come with autonomy to ensure their level of maturity and ability to express emotional intelligence without being disrespectful. Now, when it comes down to autonomy is about communicating and establishing a reasoning. It is not about debating or arguing with your parents or someone of a higher authority, or trying to emulate your authority by doing things that are not appropriate. Okay, for example, you have an angry teenager. So as a result of an angry teenager, they feel that they're entitled to break things in the home or break things that, you know, that they never purchased or don't belong to them. And they feel that, oh, because they're angry, they feel justified in doing what they're doing. No, it's unacceptable and consequences need to be enforced. Plain and simple. Okay, and that's just my example of, you know, keeping boundaries and limits when it comes down to autonomy and administering it to our teenagers or tween. Now, on the contrary to that, authority, okay? Because sometimes even as parents or someone who is of, you know, of a high authority figure can abuse their authority at times, and that needs to be highlighted as well. Okay, because a lot of times some older adults feel as though, you know, children need to do as I say and not as I do. Okay, that's one thing, but that is not a good example to set for our children. Okay, because if you're saying one thing and you're doing another, that's going to cause confusion. That's going to cause them to not want to respect you, not as a person, maybe as a parent, but not as a person, because you're contradicting yourself. Okay, and another thing too is that, you know, it's not a good example as far as teaching them what they should do versus what they shouldn't do. Okay, it's not a good indication for that, you know, if that makes sense. So if you telling your children or you telling your teen or tween not to curse, but here it is, you curse like a sailor as a parent, that's not a good example to set, whether you of age, you know, or of authority to do so. You know, you want to be able to be mindful and discretion and have some discretion when you are around children or discussing anything, or ask the children to remove themselves when you having a conversation amongst adults, so that way they won't be privy to the type of conversation or whatever is going on in that dynamic. If, you know, people are using profanity or whatever the case might be to express themselves. But I feel no adult should use any degree of profanity when they have emotional intelligence or when they are trying to express or articulate a thought. But I'm just giving a prime example of, you know, not implementing the authority accordingly, okay? So authority should be implemented by an adult who understands the balance between emotional and practical development. When emotional intelligence is achieved, it can lead to adults being able to raise and discipline their children without the force of a traumatic event, such as mistreating, beating, yelling, and screaming at our children or child in order to come to a resolution of discipline. When parents implement fear into their children as a means of discipline, it will help to a degree regarding operant conditioning. However, the child will grow up to have a level of resentment towards their parents or guardian in some cases. When parents can use the means of psychological discipline and manipulation in a harmless way as a way to enforce their authority, it'll marginalize the capacity for them to react with discontentment as far as children, you know, being feeling discontented when they being corrected about something that they did that was wrong. Therefore, psychological punishment without harm or mistreatment will have more of an impact on them to think about their actions or words that got them into the predicament that they are in. And that, you know, help them to understand there's repercussions for every action they do. So as a result, this will teach them how to take accountability for everything and anything that they do and to become responsible adults. So I'm telling you, in this day and age, beating, screaming, yelling, mistreating our children in this day and time may not cut the cake. Or whatever, but at the end of the day, psychological punishment is having more of an impact, because guess what? In this day and time, we are in the era of technology, and technology is ruling everything. So when it comes down to just, you know, having to discipline our children through beating and yelling, all of that is irrelevant, you know, at this time, and is barbaric in a sense. So when you use psychological punishment, you might take away things that they like as far as electronics, because we all know, like, these phones are like, they like metaphorically like a crack fiend, someone who just they just constantly on their phones all the time, or computer, or whatever the case might be. And we know as parents that, you know, if we take this away, it's gonna have a psychological effect on them, because it's consuming them and possibly a bad influence on them. So when we take that away and we tell them why we're taking it away from them, it makes them think about their actions and not do whatever it is that they're doing, and to think about it. And this is how they become more responsible adults and understand that there are limits, there's boundaries when parents are enforcing those things. And no offense to anyone who, you know, is suffering from drugs or anything like that, I'm just using that, you know, paradigm as an example of how children excessively use their phones or cell phones to basically do everything. And it's not just them, it's also adults as well. It's just me highlighting that technology is taking over, and that the way we need to discipline our children is in a different aspect and dynamic, because it's more of a mental thing than anything, you know. And I think that we should be able, as parents, reevaluate how we're going to discipline and raise our children in the future, okay? Especially how to be responsible and accountable adults, okay? So now that I talked about what's the difference between autonomy and authority, I would like to talk about how to administer and delegate the gift of autonomy to our children. So in my retrospective thing, when it comes down to the gift of autonomy, it gives children a voice, value, and ability to venture out into self-discovery and self-value. Okay, and when it comes down to my definition of the gift of autonomy, all parents can agree to disagree with me when it comes down to just, you know, the definitions or what I think would be a good idea as far as administering autonomy to our children. Okay, so we're going to start out with tweens. In my perspective, I think tweens are consist from the age of 13 to 15 years old. To me, they consider as tweens, okay? And then when it comes down to administering authority to these tweens, here are some of the lists that I came up with that I think would be, you know, a good, you know, thing to talk about with our children and to see how it turns out, okay? So number one, I said, you know, to give autonomy to our children is to allow them to choose what they would like to eat between three options or more. Okay? So, for example, if you're a parent, you're going food shopping, you might ask them, what do they like to eat? You know, give them an option of three. Okay, do you like Captain Crunch? Do you like Fruity Pebbles? Do you like, what you call it? Whatever list of cereals that they have, you give them an option of three and ask them to choose which one do they like, you know. And then if it's not in those three selections, maybe y'all can debate on whether they can get something else out of those three options if they don't like all three of them, right? So this is giving them autonomy because they get to choose what they would like to eat and enjoy it at the same time and feel happy at the same time as well, okay? Allow them to choose a favorite hobby that is not dangerous or harmless to their overall well-being, okay? So instead of saying, oh, well, I'm going to put Tommy into baseball, and Tommy does not really like to play baseball, but he likes to play, let's say he likes to play football, you know? So instead of forcing him to play baseball, it's good to let him do what it is that he has an interest in. And if football is something that he wants to do, let him sign up for that and let him go experience what it's like. For example, you know, just give an example, and vice versa. If it's a young lady, instead of saying, oh, well, I'm gonna put her in dancing school and she does not like to dance at all, but she likes to do things with her hands, you like create things, and you put her in dance class because you want her to do something and she doesn't like it, that's not a good thing. Let her choose her hobby or what she likes to do. She may like to create, you know, jewelry because she likes to, you know, deal with her hands. So that'll be a good hobby to actually, you know, let our children choose and to have an invested interest and support them in what they would choose as a hobby, okay? Another thing is to allow them to choose an appropriate curfew between the hours of 7 p.m. and 9 p.m., you know, so that should be the actual latest, you know, especially if they are, let's say if they, tweens, I'm not saying all, may have a permit to where they can drive. And I think that for those children who are responsible and have a permit and their parents are okay with them driving, you know, I think between those hours, 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. is appropriate time for them to come home, okay? And for those children who just hanging out or having a good time with their friends and they have a chaperone, I think a good time would be 7 p.m. and 9 p.m., not just on their own and they just, you know, roam in the streets. No, especially if they are in a city dynamic. No, okay? So that, you can agree to disagree with me for all parents, but I think that when you administer that choice for them to choose between a limited time constraint, that helps open them up to being responsible as well and help them to understand that, you know, if they want certain space or freedom, they have to respect the time that they need to be in the home. And that's just my opinion, okay? Another factor that I said when it comes down to tweens is to allow them to choose their own preference of clothing, as long as it is appropriate and within reason. So if they choose to wear their clothing a certain way and you may not agree with it, you know, allow them to express themselves, allow them to be who they are. You know, if it's not inappropriate and it's not alarming in any kind of sense, let them feel free to express themselves through their clothing and start whatever trend they choose to start or whatever the case might be. Okay. Another factor is allow them to choose their friends wisely and with caution and explain to them what a friend is and what a friend is not. Because guess what? Children need to understand that not all friends are friendship, because sometimes you could be friends with a frenemy. Okay, and a frenemy is someone who pretends to be like your friend until they do something that shows that they were never your friend from the beginning. Okay, and last thing, and this is just, you know, of the few that I listed, but there's also more that can be discussed between parents and tweens and teenagers. But the last thing I said is allow them to work summer youth programs or give them a weekly allowance so that way they can have financial literacy, financial experience as far as managing money and being able to save, you know, and to develop their financial literacy over time and educate them on, you know, things of how to create a budget, how to maintain their budget, how to save, and how to invest in things that they want in the future. Those things are good to teach our tweens at a early age. Okay, so now when it comes down to teenagers, I think teenagers, the age lies between 16 and 19 years of age. Okay, 19 years of age. So, at least I would say 16 to 18, but no, I think 19 is good. But they still consider as young adults at this time when they are teenagers or in the making of being young adults. Okay, so some of the lists that I came up with was to allow them to become domestically responsible as far as washing their own clothing and cooking their own food. Another factor is allow them to work and make their own money, with the exception of still giving them an allowance that can go towards them save go towards them as far as them learning how to save their money and having a savings account for them, if that's something that they choose to do or want to do. Allow them to decide how to strategize and deal with emergencies when it arises. It enhances their problem solving skills. Okay, allow them to get a driver's permit and allow them to choose and to develop their own sexuality with the knowledge and education of who and what they are, including their own sexual interests and means of protection. Okay, so what I mean by that, I'm not saying that our teenagers need to be sexually liberated. I don't mean that in any sense. What I'm saying is that they need to understand what homosexual is, what bisexual is. They need to understand those dynamics of what that is. And as far as sexual transmitted diseases, they need to understand that when they make a choice to be sexually active or inactive, whatever the case might be, but that they are aware of these things and what it is, opposed to just mindlessly participating in it and thinking that it's okay. Okay, so what I'm saying is that they need to be sexually, they need to have some sex education and need to understand their sexuality and what it is, okay? And then when it comes down to allowing them to get driver's permit, of course, we want to make sure that they are responsible enough to drive on the street and that they know and understand that following instructions is most important. If they can emulate that and they've shown that they're responsible, then of course allowing them that room to get a driver's permit or driver's license is a good thing. Okay, and then last thing but not least, allow them to choose a curfew between the hours of 9 and 10. They should be responsible enough to know that, okay, well, if my mom said I need to be home at 9 or 10, this is the time limit I need to be home, and not no 12 midnight at the next day. Okay, so now that I talked about how we can possibly administer, delegate, and the gift of autonomy to our children to make them feel valued, to have a voice, and to give them that ability to venture off into their self-discovery and self-value, I'm going to talk about why should parents have a balance between being high on love and discipline for our children. So very briefly, the reason why we should be high on love for our children is because it reassures children that they are cared for and matters, that someone loves them, okay? It'll make them feel worthy of love and affection, and it'll make them feel wanted as a person and human being, okay? Now, when it comes down to high on discipline, high on discipline does not look like beating them, screaming at them, and doing all of those things, because that does not emulate emotional intelligence, okay? But when you are disciplining them in a sense where they understand my mother, my father, my guardian loves me at the end of the day, this is why they are the way they are with me, because they want me to be a better person. When they can get that at the end of the day, that's all that matters, when they understand that. If they feel or they question that, then maybe we have to understand or reparent or think about how to reparent our children if they don't feel that love or they don't feel cared for, okay? So when you administer and discipline, you want them to still understand that you love them in spite of whatever punishment that they have or whatever the case might be, okay? So for children to understand, discipline is about for children to understand the thin line between their mistakes and consequences, always, and to help them to be accountable for their actions when we discipline them. So for example, if we are according psychologically disciplining them and we take something away, we tell them why we took it away, we tell them what they did was wrong and the consequences for that, and when they can get back whatever, you know, devices or whatever it is, or electronic devices it is, or whatever, when they can get it back at a set time. So they understand that they can't just do things or say things just because they feel like doing it and there's no repercussions. We don't want to do that. We want them to understand that, okay, every decision that they make or actions that they take, that they have to be accountable for everything and that there is consequences. You know, it'll also help raise responsible teenagers and tweens when we are high on love and high on discipline for our children. Okay, so now that I talked about the balance between high on love and high on discipline, I'm going to talk about, are you raising prisoners, which are emotional thinkers, Or are you raising responsible young adults who are logical thinkers? Now, how that look? And once again, all parents can agree to disagree with me. Okay? But emotional thinkers, when it comes down to raising our children, okay, they normally react in defense, always feeling like they need to defend themselves. So it may look like them raising a voice, yelling, speaking out of turns, slamming doors, or screaming or breaking things. They reacting out in defense, and those are considered emotional thinkers. Okay, having selective hearing turns into unnecessary offense. For example, I had a tween where I said specifically to her, I said her two cents is not, it doesn't matter, or something like that along the lines I said, and she took it as, interpreted as, she doesn't matter, and that's not what I said. It was a thought that she had implemented or said that was unnecessary, and I said that doesn't matter. But she thought I said entirely that she didn't matter, so she had selective hearing. So selective hearing could turn into unnecessary offense when they are not paying attention or hearing correctly, because what happens is that they will twist up people's words and feel some type of way because they don't understand what they are hearing or what's taking place, you know. So it's good to teach our children to listen and to listen carefully, and if they don't understand something, to say they don't understand it rather than assuming things. Okay, another factor of having the emotional thinker is they feel a sense of entitlement with a disrespectful demeanor. Okay, having a false sense of pride and justification to unacceptable emotions. Okay, those are emotional thinkers, and 9 times out of 10, they are being neglected at home, or they not even being acknowledged as tweens or teenagers as someone of value in the home. Now, when you are raising a logical thinker, they respond in turn when spoken to and is well-mannered. They don't speak out of turn. They don't react in defense. They respond, and they respond respectfully. Okay, another thing when we raise in logical thinkers is they listen and follow instructions carefully. Okay, and mistakes are rare to a minimum. Okay, they think in terms of sequence of events and always have a sense of respect of person. They have it for themselves and they have it for other people. Logical thinkers are also, they have emotional intelligence and they are intellectually mature for their age. They know that if they do one thing or they act a certain way emotionally, that is going to cause a reaction as far as resistance. They understand that. They know it. Or if they continuously to be rebellious, they know that that may not be the route to go. That's what raising logical thinkers. Being rebellious is only going to hurt them in the long run, and they understand that. Emotional thinkers don't understand that. They continue to perpetuate their rebelliousness and continuously keep hurting themselves because they hurting inside, but they reacting in a disrespectful manner to where, you know, someone of a higher authority do not want to, you know, pay attention or listen to them in any kind of way because they disrespectful in a demeanor or words. Okay, so it's almost as if the behaviorism that they are implementing is being disregarded, but them in totality, because they behaving in that manner and because it's them, they feel disregarded altogether. But it's not that they are being disregarded, it's their behaviorism and mannerism is being disregarded and not acknowledged when it comes down to an adult and a child. Okay, so I did say previously in one of my broadcasts that I will to a monologue on a survival guide, and this was centered on the podcast that I did on 10 warning signs to know when your child is depressed. Okay, and I said I was gonna put a survival guide monologue together, and I'm gonna perform it. But I want all my listeners to understand that to not take it to heart as far as, you know, it being literal or something that you can implement on your own, but it's just to give you a different outlook on just life, just in general, you know, because a lot of times I feel that children that are depressed or they feel, you know, a sense of like they are alone, no one listening, no one understands them, you know, and they always resort to just wanting to diminish or disappear, and they feel that, you know, suicide is the answer to that, and it's not always the answer to solving or resolving any issues or problems, let alone just homicide in general. Homicide is a very dangerous thing because it's not them hurting themselves but hurting other people. And I understand the dynamic that hurt people hurt other people, but at the end of the day, that is not the way to go either, or a good problem solving technique to go about anything. Okay, so my monologue is centered on those teenagers or children who may be, you know, feeling, you know, a sense of exclusion, and they feel like they don't matter, they feel like, you know, it's the end of the world, whatever the case might be. This is just to give them hope. Okay, so once again, this is just a performance. It's not anything that's realistic or anything of that sort. It's just a monologue, and it's just for teenagers to be able to relate to and understand in retrospect of what's happening, the chain of event in this monologue, and to just pay close attention. Okay, so with that being said, I'm gonna prepare myself for the monologue. Just give me a second. I'm so sick and tired of feeling treated like a second-class citizen in this home. It is as though how I feel and what I feel has no relevance to me living as a natural or human being. I feel stifled and confused inside. Maybe even torn to pieces. I have to live like an outcast inside and outside my home. My life behind these four walls in this room consist of mental conflict, misery, and when I walk out the doors of this house, it's an unspeakable pressure known as this feeling of torture. Too many times I'm reminded of what I am and what I'm not by my peer groups, let alone my character, is indeed assassinated before I even develop a foothold in this life. And when I go home, I'm reminded of the lack of power I don't have and how useless of a human being I am. Why can't I just be? Why can't I just be loved as I am? Why do I have to feel like I'm fighting a never-ending battle at home and a constant war zone when I'm outside? Battling with my self-worth and self-esteem, no one knows the woes I feel inside. No one hears the cry for help, and my invisibility make me feel like I should never been born. After all, I didn't ask to be here. I didn't ask to be born, and I feel unheard at home and unwanted in society. I never asked to be poor, and I never asked to be rich. I never even asked to be here with this family of mine. Why I'm the only one experiencing this pain? Why do I feel like a coward who just want to go away and die 1,000 times inside? If I go away, no one would even realize. Even if I ended it all right now, like right now, with this dagger stabbed in my heart, it'll take away the pain and misery, let alone the endless sadness. Wait, before I go, let me just write these last words to the one person I trust and love so dearly. And it goes like this. Dear loved one, I'm sorry I let you down. And although there isn't a lot of things I quite understand, I'm willing to learn and give it one more try by fighting through this battle of suppressed feelings of lost hope. Please hear my last cry for help. I don't want you to sympathize with me. I want you to have empathy through your support. I do not need anyone to save me from my own crisis and mental conflict. I need someone to understand the emotional pain I feel that is causing a mental drain on my overall well-being. I need to feel loved, acknowledged, and appreciated as the human being I am and capable of being. I have so much unlocked potential and willing to explore that side with the people who I can trust and are not secret agents to me self-destructing as a teenager. Help me help you not endure the loss of my presence, all because you didn't pay close attention or disregarded my mental conflicts. I want to live and die at the same time, and I need a way out. And if that way out can be you caring enough to look back and extend your hand out to me and pull me out of this state of depression and oppression that I so innocently feel, I have 24 hours to live. Will you care enough to come save me from my demise? I love you, and I'm sorry if leaving you behind caused any heartache or pain. Now that is the monologue. It's called Survival's Guide. And as I said before, we get endlessly suicide letters from children and or, you know, teenagers, and they take themselves out right away. But this was just to switch up the dynamic, to have them think twice before their actions, to at least give an actual, a direct call for help rather than an indirect call for help, because not a lot of times adults are paying attention to what's not being said or not paying attention to how our children are going through the things that they are going through. So as a result, they feel like nobody understands and they are alone. So this is why either teenagers react out of their emotions, and these are the subtle decisions that they make because they feel that it's an appropriate decision to make when it's really not. So this is just to switch it up, to give them hope, to at least think about what they're going to do before they do it within a 24-hour span, to at least directly ask for help rather than just take themselves out. Okay, or committing homicide or suicide or whatever the case might be. So instead of committing suicide or committing homicide in one day, as parents and people in authority, let's pay close attention to our teenagers and children. Sometimes it's not what they are saying or how they behave that's the issue. It's what our teenagers and children are not saying that is causing the most pain, misery, and inner conflict. We need to become more empathetic to the voice that is suffering in silence or looking for a way to be expressed without judgment or scolding them of their view and expression. So instead of seeking to try and understand our children in order to change them, let's understand them in ways we can become the change we would like to see in them. So that was the whole purpose of this monologue, and I hope that you all enjoyed it. I know it may have seemed a little bit emotional and may have triggered some, but I'm just here to reassure you that you're not alone and that there are people that do care, okay? All it takes is for you to open your mouth and let your cry be heard, not through taking yourself out or committing homicide by hurting another people, but make a cry for help as far as telling them, you know, telling another person that you need help, okay? Versus making the decision that's irrational and something that you can't take back, okay? So if no one told you today, and this is for all teenagers or anyone who's listening to the sound of my voice, if no one told you today that they love you, just know that as a podcaster, Sincera Mendes love you, okay? And you're not alone. So with that being said, thank you for listening to The Memoirs of Her. Bye-bye.